This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. In conversation, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Mori Amin Mohammed, and my guest tonight is somewhat of a creative guru. His creative work has garnered international awards like the coveted British DNAD, the Art Directors Club, and London's LIAA, just to mention a few. Let's welcome Darren Lin, the Chief Creative Director of Cheswood Resources. Welcome, Darren.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good. All right. So, as the Chief Creative Director of Cheswood Resources, how long have you been in the job?
Over a year.
Right. Okay. And what were you doing before that?
I run my own, I guess you could say, creative consortium.
Right.
And so I advise for other clients as well, and I've been doing that since about 4 years.
Okay.
4 years now.
So coming from the advertising business where you're responsible for the ads of many companies to being responsible for, you know, I guess the creative work of one, which is more enjoyable?
I would definitely have to say that working in-house and with Cheswood, it's been a much more, way more creative, soul-fulfilling experience.
Really? Why is that?
I think that when you join a company and you're part of a company and you're working with the company, you're seen as being one entity with the company. You're one and the same. And I think that way, that's the best way to kind of at least engender the trust and the understanding of
it. You kind of have to fit in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, more than fit in, you become part of the place and you really give your heart and soul and people see that, and I think that allows a greater trust and an understanding as well. So I'm not necessarily, or my team, or whatever project that we're working on, we're not necessarily an advertiser per se with our own agenda. We genuinely have the, you know, like Cheswood's well-being and message at the heart and core of what we do every day. So
okay,
it's good. It's we're seen as friends, okay, and family in some regards as well.
Okay. And you're based in KL?
I do a lot of work in KL, and I'm Malaysian, so I spend a lot of time here, and I shuttle back and forth between KL, Singapore, and I spend as much time as possible in Bali as well.
Oh, okay. Well, what for? You have clients there?
Myself. There's surf there.
Holidays.
You know, it's more of a creative retreat, I think you could say. It's so lovely being here. I mean, Asia, we're now, you know, the age of air travel and whatever have you. I think we're able to kind of, you know, step back and kind of potter around a little bit more.
Okay, how often do you go to Bali? Sounds like it's very often.
Not often enough. Not often enough. I love to surf. Okay. So, yeah, it's... you know, as much as possible. You know, if it were up to me, there would be a surf break right outside wherever, you know, I was at. But in this case, maybe at least once every 2 months, if I'm lucky enough.
Wow, okay. Yeah, you know, it sounds really interesting. But the last movie I remember about, that showed sort of a glimpse of what a creative director does was What Women Want, Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt. Is it like that?
I never saw the entire movie. In fact, I only saw clips of it.
Right.
From what I recall, Mel had to translate or almost...
He could read minds, basically, yeah. And
particularly women's minds.
Yeah, in that movie, he actually kind of stole people's ideas.
I think expressing what consumers and understanding what consumers want and need is you could say, the basis of why people do focus groups and everything. You want to know how and why you're connecting and how to connect to who it is that you're speaking to. Mm-hmm. Having said that, with knowing the target audience in mind, I think you could do possibly better messaging if... Yes, you understand who you're talking to, but if there was a way that you actually personally have experienced what it is that you're trying to say, and that is actually more meaningful if you can sort of, if it came from a personal part of yourself.
Okay.
So in that regard, I think, yeah, I think it's more gratifying anytime you do a piece of work if you are personally attached to it, not necessarily just for who it is you're talking to.
Okay. Now, you have your own company, right, called Tremendousness, which specializes in brand development, graphic design, even film.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So with your current appointment, are you still very much involved in it? I mean, how do you split your time?
I think it's great, and especially if you're working on quote unquote something creative, that you don't necessarily do that one thing all the time. It's important, particularly for myself, found through the years, to just be continually engaged, and to do that, it's nice to mix things up a little bit. And it's inevitable that you get to a place with any project that you can only do so much, or you get stuck. And at that point, it's more gratifying to keep moving, keep working, keep thinking, and just move on to another project. And give your mind, it's especially important, give your mind time to relax or not think, and use that time to kind of focus on something else.
Hence then, Bali.
Yeah, or music, anything, and just to kind of step away from it and then let your mind do its own thing and then come back to it fresh.
Yeah, so. I guess some people might imagine that creative people to be sort of artists, you know, literally being able to draw. Do you fit the cliche?
Yeah. In fact, yes, I think my first love was drawing, mm-hmm. And still is in some regards.
And, so what sort of medium do you use?
Just pen and ink.
Right.
And just doodling and kind of, you know, yeah, it's a good way to pass the time, so to speak.
Okay. So is that what drew you to the creative industry?
I think yes, and also knowing that I was absolutely terrible at math at an early age, and just knowing what you just cannot do helps you focus on what, you know, apparently you might be able to do.
So you were running away from math into the creative industry.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay. Now, you mentioned also that you've always been a very visual person with the love of arts, you know, film and mixed media. Do you collect any forms of art?
I do, and I have paintings and photographs and yeah, not one particular artist,
right?
But just things that I find. I definitely love going to art shows and looking at fantastic art.
Okay.
And having said that, I think I'm not so much of a collector. I think I enjoy making it more than anything else. And yeah.
Any favorite pieces?
Of art,
yeah, in your collection, whether you bought or made yourself.
There is this piece by a Korean American artist, and her name escapes me right now. Saley, that's right.
Right,
Saley Oh, and she painted this fantastic piece. She painted it on a piece of wood which she carved into the shape of a whale, and it's about I would say 4 meters long.
Wow.
And it sits above my bed at home, and it's everything's painted on there, and it's also a collage. And on this shape of this whale, she's painted a woman that's lying on the ground taking a nap. So, yeah, I have it at home because every time I see it, it kind of lulls me to sleep. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. And then she kind of does this collage thing where with pieces of paper, she makes trees and things like that on this whale. So it's kind
sounds fantastic.
Very surreal and peaceful. Mm.
Okay. Now, where were you schooled in art and design? And presumably, you had to gain some technical training as well.
Yeah, I took some classes in the beginning at NAFA, which is Nanyang Academy of Fine Art, and I think I was at La Salle for a little bit as well. And when I was growing up in school, you know, I couldn't do math, but when it came to art class, you know, I could make something happen with crayons and stuff like that. So mostly we had to draw asparagus for some reason in school.
That's again, a challenge.
And then I went to college at in the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan in New York City.
That's a long way away.
Yes. And
why Manhattan?
Actually, I started out in Detroit at this school called Center for Creative Studies.
Okay.
And I spent about 2 years there, and then I transferred to SVA. And why, I guess, you know, growing up, I just kind of felt like I wanted the most different experience that I could encounter. And at that point in my life, I thought it was to travel and go to the States.
Okay. And then you started off your career in the industry with Mad Dogs and Englishmen in New York.
Yeah.
Compared to, say, the local advertising job market, where the salaries are quite low and the hours long, was it similar there?
Absolutely.
Industry standard, then.
Industry standard, you know, you get barely enough to survive, but, you know, you're allowed to stay in the country.
Right.
And you pay your dues every step of the way.
How long does it take to sort of pay your dues before you get comfortable?
It took me 5 years to kind of feel like, okay, I think I kind of know what I'm doing here.
Right.
And then I think more like in the last, I think after about 8 to 10 years, then I started to feel more comfortable and more, you know, yeah, more relaxed, I guess. Yeah.
Was it all in the US, the 8 to 10 years?
Yeah, I've spent the last almost 20 years there.
Okay, right. Okay. So what made you decide to leave the US and come back to Asia, Southeast Asia even?
I think opportunity.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think there's just so much happening here in this part of the world.
So it's not because you're a Malaysian?
Oh, definitely. I think it's almost a rediscovery of where I'm from.
Right.
And that is, it's a fantastic journey. You know, I have a son and he's 8 years old, and being able to show him this part of the world and be able to kind of rediscover things and see life through his eyes, it's just such a fulfilling experience. And to also to have been through some of these experiences in my own childhood, mm-hmm. it's like coming full circle. So it's okay. that as well.
Okay. But you've spent 20 years in the US. Coming back here, was there any culture shock, at least in the work environment?
Yeah. I think, you know, yes. Let's put it that way. Absolutely. I think I forgot like how and what it was like coming from this part of the world. And also, I mean, you have to pay your dues all over again.
Right.
So that was difficult and tough, and it's worth it. It's been worth it every step of the way.
Oh, very good. Now, help me to understand something. Now, do advertising executives travel well around the world? I mean, considering that, I mean, we spoke about this earlier off air, that you sort of need to know the local culture, right, to be able to sort of sell to the local community, right? That's what advertising does. Now, is that true? I mean, would you be able to say, you know, just plant yourself into India and start advertising there?
I think so. I think more than saying something that a company wants you to say, or a product is wants, you know, is begging to be said, or what people want to hear, more than that, if you can say something that is truthful and resonates with human nature, that is the best message. That is the best thing. Because if you say yellow, it's great. It's yellow. It's going to turn your hair blue and then your hair turns pink. It's going to catch up with you sooner or later. So anytime you can really connect with human emotion and human truths and talk about those things in your advertising, I think that is the best way to kind of impart a message. And after saying that and maybe making a connection with somebody else, and then sort of adding in, and by the way, there's this product that seems, that happens to kind of have some of these same values. Mm-hmm. I think that's the better way to go, if you can actually impart some piece of entertainment or some insight that perhaps might amuse somebody mm-hmm. in their lives, and, you know, might stand out from the 2,000 other messages that we're bombarded with every day. And then very light-handedly go, and here's a product that you might consider possibly purchasing or trying out. I think that's, you know, we're on a consumer level, I think we're savvy enough at this point to kind of be able to make up our minds ourselves.
Okay. Right, we're going to take a quick break here, and I'm going to play your first song choice, which is Daydream by Youth Lagoon. Now, why did you pick this one?
I listen to a lot of music, so I don't actually think very much about why or what. So this is just something that I've been listening to for the last month or so, And I just seem to hit the repeat button a lot on this.
How do you discover new music for yourself?
I listen to podcasts a lot. So this one came from... the name escapes me, but it's a podcast on iTunes.
Okay. So it's sort of a recommendation.
Yeah. This, I think it's, if I'm not wrong, it's Sounds You Might Have Missed or Sounds You Haven't Heard or something like that. And this guy does, I think he's out of New York, and he does this podcast every 2 weeks, bi-weekly. Mm-hmm. So that's one way. And then friends, for sure. When I work together with my colleagues and my team, you know, everyone kind of shares, and somebody plays 10 tunes, they run out of new music. Somebody else takes the speaker and they put in 10 tunes. And if you hear something good, you kind of...
Crowdsourcing for your music tastes.
Yeah.
All right, then. I'm going to play your first song, Daydream by Youth Lagoon. We'll be back after the news.
In Conversation, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back. I'm Mori Amin Mohammed, speaking to Darren Lin, the Chief Creative Director of Chaswood Resources. Now, Darren, just continuing our conversation earlier, what would you say about the creativity of the Malaysian advertising industry in the recent years? I mean, you've been away for so long. Have you been paying attention to what's happening here?
Yes, I did some interviews in Malaysia. I went through a couple of places in KL. And man, I mean, I was blown away by some of the work that came out of the industry here. Okay. I mean, it's like world-class work, top at the top of the heap kind of stuff. And that was just in the recent 2-3 years that was happening at certain agencies here KL. So yeah, there's great opportunities here for sure.
I'd say that Malaysians as a nation, well, overall do tend to be more conservative, you know, say compared to the Americans or the Europeans. For example, when it comes to, you know, the physical body or public displays of affection, do you see, or do you find these as, or any of our other social norms restrictive in terms of expressing your creativity?
I think, yes, I've definitely had to pay more attention to cultural sensitivities and you know, what part of the body you don't show or you are okay to show. And it's important, I think, definitely to respect all the local traditions, cultures, norms, and everything like that. And having said that, I think there's still a lot of human, you know, human things that we can relate to without, you know, necessarily having to be hung up on smaller kind of cultural kind of sensitivities.
Right.
There's a lot of territory to cover, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Does that mean that you've changed your tactic somewhat when you came back from the US? Did you use the physical body much when, you know, you were doing your advertising in the US?
I think dialogue is something that I rely on less here in some regards. And I think visuals are something that translate better in countries, particularly places where it's multilingual.
Okay.
And again, I think you always go for what makes us all human and what relates us together, those truths. So I think those apply anywhere in any country or culture.
Okay. What about your clients? Do you have much of a hard time selling them ideas?
No, I think... I'm very fortunate, I think, so far to say that we are open enough and clients here are smart enough to kind of go, hey, you know what, this is a message that we're trying to portray, and this is something that we're trying to say, and if the message is said well or told well, it's an opportunity. And I think clients are really open and savvy and for the most part, really, really, really good to work with, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And would that describe your kind of ideal client?
Yes. And again, I think it takes time to start a culture, mm-hmm. and for people to see what it is that you're doing and where it can take a company or where it can take them or you or as an organization.
That's on top of having a client with a limitless budget, of course.
Right. And I think that makes you be a little bit more self-reliant and also makes you reinvent things as well and just figure out how to do things differently. It doesn't necessarily have to be an obstacle. It just makes you work a little harder to find what can be interesting for messages and in an ad or anything that you're doing.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell me about some of your projects over the years? Have you had any favorites?
I think on the bigger budget, bigger budget side of things, I was fortunate enough to do this campaign for ESPN, which was at that time bought by Disney. And we launched the X Games in Los Angeles. It was the first time it was going to Los Angeles. So that was an exciting campaign. I got to work with all the X Games athletes, some of whom were like just incredible, some of the best athletes, I think, in the world. And young, kind of hip, you know, like just out there kind of guys and gals. And and then I got to work with some Hollywood stars as well, like Hugh Hefner was one of them, and we got to shoot some of the commercials there at the Playboy Mansion.
Right.
That was fun. That was definitely one highlight in my career.
I'm sure it was. Now, you've got a long list of awards to your name. So which one was the most special to you? Can you choose?
There was this award that we won for Friends of Animals.
Right.
And this happened very early on, and it was at Mad Dogs and Englishmen, and it was for this nonprofit organization called Friends of Animals, and it was basically an anti-fur campaign. And we had this line that was basically, it said something like, fur is a thing of the past, evolve. So we did commercials where we had Neanderthal-like people
right.
dressed in fur, and the TV spot looks as if a beautiful woman is, you know, wearing this nice fur coat and posing for the camera. And as the camera pans by and you get to her face, she's this Neanderthal-like woman with buck teeth and everything, and then facial hair, and she's honking on a piece of zebra leg or something like that, you know. So, and then we had these giant posters as well with words on it, like street signs telling people, treating Neanderthals, you know, all fur wearers as Neanderthals, and telling them basically to behave. And we staged these protests outside Fendi and all these fur stores in New York City, and all these fur activists would carry these signs up and kind of, you know, yell. Right.
Was that one of your first awards?
Yeah, that was like my second or third.
Okay.
It was it meant a lot to me at the time.
Okay.
I think, because I think I'd started in the industry, I was very passionate about what I do. And to be able to work on something that I had no expectations about, and to see it within a few months, you know, getting some acclaim or attention, at the time it was very special.
And would you say that these, I mean, I guess for people who are sort of paying attention, it seems like the advertising industry does have a lot of awards. Do
yes.
they really count? Do they help your career, I mean, specifically?
I think it's important to do it for the sake of wanting to do it, doing a great job of what this piece of work is, and for your client and for the product. And having said that, I think that's the best way to do it.
Right.
And then any magic or any, you know, metal, shiny metal that you happen to accumulate as a result of it, I think is just a bonus. And doing the job for what is in front of you and doing it as best as you can do, I think that should be the sort of the carrot at the end of the stick, so to speak, first and foremost. And I think the industry itself is reinventing itself.
And also,
I think the industry is now more sensitive to ads that are, they call it scam ads. Ads that are done for the sake of award shows. And I think now creatives point at a piece of work and go, hey, that didn't really run, that didn't do anything at all, that was just done for the sake of an award. I think the industry has changed and is still in the midst of changing. And so you find that there's less of that. And when work is done with a genuine purpose for the original intent of what this, of what the client or what the product
which
requires,
is selling product, right?
I think that is the most gratifying work that okay. can be done, and for the most part, people can see that. Okay. Judges can see that.
So it sounds to me like an ad that is serving its commercial purpose, which is to sell the product, and an ad that's for artistic purpose, which is, you know, kind of showing off, really. But how do you tell that it's a scam ad? Because, I mean, you want to get beyond the, you know, here's a product that you can buy, and you don't want to get into an area where it's so out there that people can't really see what product you're selling. So how do you spot a scam ad?
I think as a judge, if you were a judge in an award show and you had to go through all these entries, you're also a consumer, and because it's our work, we definitely have our ears attuned okay. to what you see and what you hear in the media. And if it's something that has made an impression, it becomes viral, it's something on social networks, and inevitably the industry itself picks up on it. And then you see it, whether it's in a magazine or you hear it on the radio, or you tune into it on the web as well. And those are the campaigns that you know are real, because they come with a story, and they also come with results.
They touch a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Now, is it more challenging now to do advertising with, you know, YouTube and Facebook and, you know, so many platforms of social media, and people and users of these social media sort of websites are very savvy nowadays. They know how to spot an ad, and a lot of people avoid ads, right? So how do you overcome these challenges anyway?
I think there's this weird general rule of thumb that 95% of things that are done in any given industry is not necessarily done well. And 5% is actually really, really good, and, okay. and really, you know, somebody's put their heart and soul or whatever it is into it. I think if you do something well, even if it is advertising, and even if people are bombarded by so many messages every day, if you do a really craft a piece of advertising, something that people might wrap fish in, right? If it is done well and really given its time and attention, inevitably somebody may pick up on it.
Okay.
So it stands out from the rest of the stuff. And I think now with all these different media channels and things like you mentioned, YouTube and all that kind of stuff, it's more interesting now than ever before, because you are now no longer relegated to having to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, to buy media for a particular message or a brand that has this budget to have a reason to say something. And now you can actually just do something and put it online, and if it is done well, it will find an audience and a following. So again, all the different forms of media is not a problem, because if you have something to say and you have a message or you have a piece of work that is actually interesting, it will eventually find its way onto all these different platforms itself, and people will pass it on and share it, and people will see it. So it's actually, I think, a more exciting time than ever before to be doing this kind of stuff.
Okay. You have a son.
Yes. And if I may, Rumi, if you're listening, I love you.
How old is he?
He's 7.5. He's turning 8 tomorrow, actually.
Oh,
tomorrow is
good.
His birthday.
Okay. Okay. Now, Is he on Facebook? Is he on the internet? Is he using social media and all that?
Kids are growing so quickly today, and we have decided to slow that one particular part of his experience. I have no doubt that in a year or two, or in a week or so, he will be on this and that. But having said that, he's not on Facebook as of yet. Mm. In school, he has learned about Facebook, and his teachers have taught them about and have encouraged them to do this and that on social media. So he's cognizant of all that kind of stuff. He is on the web, that's for sure.
Okay.
He started finding things that I couldn't find on the web. on YouTube or whatever, he can find things like like nobody's business now. Right. Kids these days are incredible. They if they want to find something, they know how to search for it. And it's incredible. So,
are you worried about the effect of advertising on your own kid, though? being in the advertising industry yourself, right?
Yeah, it's weird. We don't watch very much television at home, so I love being online and finding the things that you want to search or watch online, and. And then we watch film and we watch TV shows and things like that. But we definitely try and contain what it is that we see and try and watch good quality kind of stuff, mm-hmm. if it's possible. Mm-hmm. Inevitably, we run across ads and things like that, and we talk about it as well. So mm-hmm. what little we do consume, we enjoy.
Okay. Now, I understand that you're actually in the midst of writing your second screenplay. What is it about?
I can't say at the moment, but I'll say, it's about fruit. I'll put it that way. Yeah, it's about fruit.
Okay. And how far is it along?
It's actually, the first draft is finished.
Okay.
And I'm just going for rewrites now, again and again. And it's 114 pages long right now.
So why do you do it? I mean, I thought you're a visual person and, you know, artist and everything.
It's weird. One of my ex-bosses told me, you can draw. Well, you know what? First rule of thumb, let me tell you, in advertising, don't draw. pretend that you cannot draw, in fact. And that was just one person's opinion. Because people who cannot articulate an idea inevitably come to you and say, hey, can you help me put this idea? And then you become, as it's important to continue to draw if you can express an idea that way. It's just important to not necessarily use that as the only way to express yourself,
right.
At least in my field. So writing, as counterintuitive as it is to me over the years, is something that I have a love-hate relationship with. It's so difficult, but at the same time, it's also become one of the most gratifying forms of expression for me.
Okay.
And so, having written this, it's all in words. But when you write it a certain way and you fit into that mold, and if you write it well as a screenplay, the words jump off and become visuals right off the page, and you don't even have to. You don't really have to do very much work to see those kinds of shots or visuals kind of happen. Okay. So, as difficult as it is, I'm relishing if the opportunity comes and the point happens when I get to actually shoot these things.
Okay. Now, between your current job as the chief creative director, running your own company, shuttling between Malaysia and Singapore, taking care of your kid, and surfing in Bali, do you even have any free time?
Yes. I get a couple of minutes here and there.
Right.
And I think we can do so much. I think we're just human beings. I think if you enjoy what you do, there's a reason why you get up in the morning. And we were talking about that. And you enjoy doing this. And you're a fantastic conversationalist. And for that reason, I think I enjoy communicating as well. And so I can't find enough time or hours of the day to keep doing these things. And I have free time as well.
Okay, that's good to know. That's what I aspire to, having some free time.
I think particularly in these things that we do, if you give yourself 2 hours, you find that you take 2 hours to come to arrive at a conclusion. And if you say, hey, you know what, I'm going to spontaneously realize this thing in 10 minutes and challenge your brain to do that and really wholeheartedly believe that you can come to a solution for it, we are able to manifest great and amazing things and sometimes surprise ourselves.
Okay. Right, why don't let's end our interview with this sentence. Being creative is...
Being creative is enjoying yourself and being free and being in the moment.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. Right, okay, so I'm going to end this with your second song choice, which is Sprawl 2, Mountains Beyond Mountains by Arcade Fire. Why this song? Why do you like it?
This one is about it's about malls, shopping malls.
Right. Sprawl, that's where it came from. Okay.
Yeah. And having lived in some countries and you know, even where we are now, I think it's a hot topic. it's also a love-hate thing, for sure. Mm. And, yeah.
That's where a lot of your work goes, isn't it? I mean, the product of your work.
True, yeah. True.
Okay, there you go. That, we've just had an in-conversation with Darren Lin, the Chief Creative Director of Chazwood Resources. And his second song choice, second and last song choice, Sprawl 2 by Arcade Fire. This has been in conversation on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.